60 minutes, wishbone, push the limits, Jack Crow, nine straight, bow over the top. Michigan, Sugar Bowl, Miami jumped up the polls, Aldo Bracco, Randy Campbell, damn that Texas flop. Tommy Agee, wrong way, bow, Greg Carr, bow nose, Lewis Colbert, Heisman Trophy, Van Tiffin, Iron Bowl, Tamborello, Fullwood, Lawyer, Tillman, Reavers, good, Andre Proust, Kurt Grain, Syracuse, Sugar Bowl.
This is the year for Bo Nix. He's improved so much in this new offense. He's focused and having fun now. He's a dark horse for the Heisman Trophy.
Benji Rowland, Walter Reed's earthquake and took out our knees.
Tracy the Craig Jordan Hare Stadium time is 8:43 p.m. Central Daylight Time. The voice you're listening to is Center Crow 2 on Twitter at Center Crow and Venmo. We spare no expense. You are listening to the Orange and True podcast, harbored by your friendly folks at College of Magnolia.com. Greetings, salutations, Orange and Truthers. It is I, joined, as always, by Ryan S. Starrett. At Ryan S. Starrett on Twitter, the S stands for silence. That's what
run
you heard.
Damn ball, Bobo. No, the S just stands for run the damn ball, Bobo.
To the other side of me, giving you full Fort Payne ASMR, giving you the hottest of hot takes this week, I'm sure, the AU chief.
I wouldn't call myself a fan of steampunk, but I will say it's the healthiest way to prepare punk.
Is that a Norm Macdonald joint?
It is.
Yeah.
It's my Norm was my favorite comedian, so.
R.I.P.
Rough week for the old chiefster there.
Mine was one of my favorite of his was the turtle joke that he tells. It's one of the all time great Conan O'Brien moments.
It was hard to come up with a Norm joke to tell to start the pod because they're all so long. All the good ones are so long. He's a storyteller.
I'm asking Jack right now. I'm producing the show live via Skype.
My wife's an old battle axe.
Well, he says the one on Conan that was like a Rodney Dangerfield joke where he says, he was like, Conan, I'm looking in the mirror and I look fat. I look out of shape. My nose is all crooked and I look terrible. And I get in the bed, I look at my wife and I tell her all this and I say, you got to tell me something you like about me. I'm feeling horrible. And she says, well, you have perfect vision. All right. So we opened with the We Didn't Start the Fire cover. This is the year for Bo Nix. And I did so because it is so incredibly good. Johnny Dent, you talk about absolutely nailing it. If you don't follow him on Twitter, it's literally the least you could do is give him, throw him a couple of follows.
He's a much better frontman than you, I've got to say.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Yeah, nobody's told him that in the last few days, right?
Johnny, you're listening to this. Well, we need to collab on something, but hopefully you can sing the Kenny Rogers part of Islands in the Stream because I've been looking for somebody to partner with on that. Ryan doesn't get that joke.
No, he doesn't.
I know Kenny Rogers is. That's it.
The song Islands in the Stream is a beautiful love song duet from Kenny Rogers and the queen goddess of all the universe, Dolly Parton, sings the other part. So I'd be singing the Dolly verse.
The only song you ever need to hear in your life, and Ryan hasn't ever heard it. So
it really should be the song we send out to space to like other life forms. Like, yeah. This is it. This is what it's about on this planet. A man and a woman falling in love.
That's what we want it to be about on this planet.
Yeah.
This is how we want to represent ourselves, this song.
Yeah. Come away with me to another place. All right. Let's start out with the most important thing that happened last week. The Auburn Tigers beat the dog crap out of them, didn't they? 3-0.
They did.
3-0 over the Georgia Bulldogs in soccer. And Haddock has She scores goals for fun, as they say in the Premier League. 7 goals on the year, 2 in this game, which means she's got to be pretty high on the conference in terms of goals, because she scored 2 in the first in her first conference game.
Not gimmies either. I
mean, no.
Just rockets to the back of the net.
Yeah.
And then this, our great goalie, goals. Prochazka, another shutout. Mm-hmm. And Ryan has.
Yeah. She's a true sophomore. Yeah. And then, so last year with the mess of the schedule and then with the Georgia game this week, in 14 career SEC matches, only allowed 11 goals.
Wow.
That's absurd numbers.
Not bad.
That's a few shutouts.
Kind of numbers you see most teams give up to the non-conference opponents. She's doing that against the SEC.
Because if you don't know, women's college soccer actually is a little bit more exciting than
a lot of goals.
Yeah, there's a lot more goals. There's a lot more goals usually than in other codes because of usually the goalies aren't that great, and so you get a lot of goals. You know how, like, I don't know, I'm not one of these people, but there are a lot of people who prefer college football to the NFL precisely because it's a little bit worse. Like the players,
a little more loose.
Yeah, the players aren't very good. Comparatively. Yeah. And so there's more opportunity for mistakes, which means big plays, which means excitement. College soccer is that way as well. And women's college soccer especially is that way. Because some of these girls are immensely talented. And so when you have one of those going up against a girl who might make a mistake, you get excitement, you get big plays, you get goals.
Yeah, I mean, it's always good to beat Georgia. I think Justin Lee tweeted out that this is our 4th win against Georgia in this calendar year.
Yeah.
It's always a good feeling.
It was a weird year, man. You played them 3 times, and 4 times before the SEC tournament. It's a weird year.
Well, I don't think that was soccer.
Not all soccer.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, you could have told me because that spring soccer season this year was so bizarre. You could have told me we beat them 3 times in women's soccer this spring.
Well, this was a weird game, too, just with that rain delay after the first goal to go up 1-0 in the first half. I think from the time this game started until it finished, it was probably pushing 4 hours.
Wow.
Good to see them come back out and put away Georgia.
It's interesting because that's not something you ever see happen in – I've been watching soccer for the better part of 10 years and it rains a lot in England. I don't know if you knew that. And I've never seen a game get rained out ever. So that's interesting.
Breaking news. Lynn J. Dixon of Clemson has decided he's entering the transfer portal.
He's just done.
So. Huh. If you listen to this, Coach Arson,
Can he play left tackle?
No. No.
Can he play wide receiver?
No, he's a running back. He's a 5'10".
Yeah, we don't need those.
Yeah, we're okay there.
I think we're better than okay.
Well,
we'll get to that. Several other
There
positions.
Are a lot of people who would like to maybe build the whole offense out of that position, so if that's the case.
Can he play?
He would be the best rugby team in the SEC.
Anywhere in the defense?
If he's 5'10", 195 running back, I bet he could play a little DB if he had to.
Maybe.
I love the ice sound. The other podcasts don't give you that.
That's that ASMR.
It's ASMR.
Podcast it in the open.
We're also recording a sound effects record every episode. We're just adding
it's
to
just
it.
It's just ice. It's just ice.
Just adding to it. Tennessee, Auburn goes to the Vols, number 17 Vols. Who were 7-1, lost to Arkansas, who's also highly ranked. But Tennessee ain't played nobody, Paul. Only team they played that beat them. They're goal
No ranked teams in the non-con.
Yeah. And their goal differential is 26-3.
Yeah.
Wow.
And those 3 might have all been from Arkansas just now. Or that was their non-con goal differential.
Yeah, I mean, it's, no hate. Winning non-con games 60-0 or 60-10 or 62-0. It's always fun.
Yeah,
you can only beat who they put in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you can do.
In the last eight matches,
a bunch of those blowouts were pretty chippy. I mean, maybe just compared to watching Auburn play this year, but eight matches and they've had eight yellow cards. Their opponents have had nine.
Wow.
I think Auburn, in comparison, only had three on the year.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're physical. CONCACAF squad. Their leading goal scorer is from the Mid-Cities, from Irving, Texas. Jada Thomas, from the former home of the Dallas Cowboys, current home of a massive parking lot that used to be the home of the Cowboys.
Sunderland of the SEC?
Yeah. Yeah, is that show any good?
I've never watched the show. I know that Sunderland liked to just they didn't like to play football so much as they liked to just kick people.
I have a friend who loves it, who said it's like the anti all or nothing. Where all the all or nothings were like a team that's really good.
Yeah, yeah.
And like the Sunderland Till I Die is like, what do you do when you make a documentary of a team that's about to get relegated?
I think James Jones has watched it. So we'll have to ask him about that next time he's on.
Tweet the show, James, at Ryan S. Starrett on Twitter. Is Sunderland Till I Die worth the watch?
Between all the soccer at me.
Yep.
Auburn soccer, definitely do. I want to hear it. Outside of that, yeah.
We need to get Ryan a team to watch on ESPN Plus. I guess you could watch Dortmund.
Could watch Dortmund. They're fun to watch.
Dude, they are cocaine on two legs is what that team is right now.
They have
what they're going to call cocaine on cocaine.
The ugliest man in the world that might be the best ever.
He was built in a lab in Norway. He comes from the land of the ice and snow.
They ignored his looks. They didn't care what he looked like. They just cared what he could do.
He is bigger than everybody else, faster than everybody else, and stronger than everybody else. It plays striker.
And more confident than anybody else.
Yeah, if Russell Westbrook had grown up in Norway, this is what I imagine would be the case. He'd be just doing this. Ryan, he scored a goal.
Is Terrell Owens the soccer player?
Yeah, that's a good comp.
Oh, yeah.
He scored a goal the other day. Yes, this past game, he scored a goal. And you know it's a good shot when the announcers are just dying laughing. Because it's just so preposterous that it went in.
My wife does not believe he meant to do that. And I'm like, honey, he looks at the goal. He knows the keeper's off his line. And he's like, yeah, I'll try this.
Screw it.
And it goes in.
Bangers only. He is 100% bangers only. It's terrific. If you haven't seen it, look it up.
Name for anyone. Hasn't
Erling Haaland, Ryan, get your number 9 BVB Bifal Bay kit with Haaland on the back. A lot of A's. You don't have to pay any extra for them. It's three A's
anyway,
in his name.
Erling doesn't play for Auburn, and
if he did, it would be Haddock, who has got 7 goals, and she is going to be somebody we're going to lean on against Texas A&M because Texas A&M. Yes, they're only 5-3-1, but all three of those losses are to top 10 teams. Number 1, FSU. Oh, wow. Number 8, TCU. And number 9, the Pepperdine Wash 'Em Out Waves. All three of those are one-goal losses. They got a top 10 win over Clemson, number 9. 3-1.
So that's going to be a pretty big test for us. Bigger than I expected, just seeing as they're not ranked. And
look, the Aggies are always pretty good. So are the Horns, usually. But it's a fairly recruitable.
Like all these good soccer players we talked about are from Texas. I would think Texas A&M should have a decent program.
It's a pretty good fertile recruiting grounds there, Houston. Yeah. Houston and Dallas.
There's a lot of wealthy people in the
Houston suburbs and the Dallas area.
Plus, you got three MLS academies.
Yeah.
Run teams. Yeah,
The problem with America is it takes a lot of money to actually be involved in soccer. So then,
like,
it's usually your wealthy areas are the ones with the soccer players.
Auburn has two or three girls who came through the FC Dallas Academy.
That's pretty good.
So the MLS Academy systems in Texas are turning out Division I women's soccer players pretty well. Plus, these tournaments are just like, there's a lot of fields here, and the tournaments are just massive. So you just, it's a good place. It's a good place to recruit talent. And Texas A&M has a lot of it. They got 9 yellow cards on the year and 15 by their opponents. So something about the way they play makes their opponents just tackle cleats up. I guess that'd be a red, but still, a lot of fouls.
Just the triple option of women's soccer.
Mm.
They're the Gareth Barry of women's soccer.
There it is.
He's gonna eventually get suspended for getting too many yellows, but he's also gonna have some other people get red cards trying to kick him. So.
All right, let's go on to the other football. Auburn lost. They could not handle that everybody was wearing the same color shirt.
Yeah, that was definitely it.
And got beat.
Oh, the whiteout was because of the shirts? I didn't realize that's what they were doing.
Oh, yeah, that's it, too. There's two different kinds of whiteouts going on at Penn State, looks like.
I don't know if you guys noticed watching at home, but I did notice that they put Holly Rowe in the student section right at the beginning, and they just happened to pick the only non-white people in the entire stadium, I think, that were not there for Auburn.
They probably loved that Sweet Caroline sing-along there towards the end.
Look, we cannot make fun of that. I keep telling you that. We do that. I hate it. I've hated it since I was a student. I'm like, I knew what it was. I'm like, this is Neil Diamond. This is so stupid. I'm like, it's not Coming to America. If it were Coming to America, great song. Anything else, it's the lamest thing on the face of the planet. Why are we singing this?
We should sing Islands in the Stream.
We should, which is not lame. But I'm just like, why? No one in this stadium knows the song. This was not a banger on the radio.
Did it start because – so the Red Sox have done this for a while, and did it start during their World Series run?
No, it was before.
03-04?
I came to school.
03-04, it was – 03-04, it was definitely the Sox playing it was – becoming like nationally known, and I think Auburn may have started playing it
maybe
02, 03, 04, like somewhere in that same around, like that
but
same
I'm just, like,
time.
Like, I don't hate that song, but I'm just like, this is not, why are you people into this? Why are there people singing this?
It should be Forever in Blue Jeans. That's a great Neil Diamond song.
Well,
or Cracklin' Rose, get on board. Everybody in the crowd's just, we're gonna ride till there ain't no more to go. Taking it slow.
Again, could not be whiter.
Bo Nix had a very Bo Nix game. People are going to defend him. It was a very Bo Nix game. 21 for 37 for a .185. A good chunk of that 21 were behind the line of scrimmage or at the line of scrimmage passes, which is how he ended up completing 21 passes for 185 yards.
Can we at least agree, as a Bo Nix apologist, that his receivers gave him no help in this game.
Yeah. Here's the thing about Bo Nix.
Jackson falls down with nobody in front of him. Demetrius Robertson has a perfect touchdown pass that he never sees.
The problem with Bo Nix is that three things can all be true at the exact same time. And I put this in our Slack earlier. When he has a bad play, it is either because, one, he didn't get enough protection. Two, he didn't have the ability. Three, his receivers let him down. But all three can all happen on the same play, and we do see that with him a lot.
I'll say this. His protection was not
– no, it was good.
Terrible.
No, it was actually really good this game.
They were good enough, and honestly, I think Bo was good enough, but he did not get help. Like when you've got a guy like Bo, you can't afford to drop passes – that are wide open. You can't afford to just
That does include if you're a defender as well.
That's true.
They didn't catch much either.
Bro, that pick six would have been bad. Like,
yeah. That would not have been – that was in a real bad time.
Stared him down.
And what happened there – and that actually, that particular play, and not because of throw being what it was, that was right back to last year. They knew I don't think they were necessarily reading his eyes. I think he did because the defender knew where it was going. They knew he was going to Shanker. They knew it because that's the only guy he could trust in that game was Shanker. And they knew he was going to him, and that's why that happened.
Not even going back to last year, but going back to last week, Alabama State dropped that exact same interception.
Yeah. That was the only time that I really, really felt like, okay, this is just the Bo that's locked in on one thing and he's not doing what he's supposed to do. He went through his progression a lot. It's just
fast forward though with me real quick to apparently the play that everyone wants to talk about the most, 4th and 2.
Ugh.
After the game now, Harsin has said that there were actually 5 options on that play. Bo had 5 reads.
Let me see. If there are 5 options on a 4th and 2 play, too many options.
That's stupid.
That's too many for Tom Brady.
If you noticed, it wasn't like Bo went through his progressions on that play. He snapped the ball and threw it as fast as he could.
When you're playing NCAA and you hit A to snap and then you slip and hit A again real quick. Oh, shit, I didn't mean to.
Right. Yeah. Now, the problem is there were 5 options and one of them wasn't he turns the ball and puts it in 4th stomach and then runs off the field with his hands in the air, which is what he should have done.
I don't know. That whole thing.
Not only does a Tank Bigsby run likely end up in a touchdown, but if it doesn't, say he goes down at the 1 yard line, the next play Auburn stuffs Noah Cain, and instead of being at the 2, they're at the 1, and they stuff him in the end zone for a safety.
Well, they may have gotten a safety anyway that they didn't.
Well, you know, these weren't the best officials.
I can't complain about the officials.
They were so bad. They're just so bad.
The head official. It is the one that looks exactly like my wife's uncle, like exactly like her Uncle Cookie. And because she's like, oh, it's Uncle Cookie whenever she sees him. And I knew we were in trouble because they are terrible.
You know, the SEC hasn't released an apology, have they, for this game?
Oh, no. No.
So as bad
they
as
did say, they did say the 3rd down fiasco.
Oh, my God. It could be worse, though.
They
could
released an apology for Memphis.
Yeah, I was going to say, there could be the Arkansas, the Memphis-Mississippi State game where they released an apology that had five paragraphs or whatever.
It's so sad, and it's so sad that when they, like, at the beginning, they were like, can we have the SEC officials for this game? And I said, oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure the Penn State fans are like, yeah, they tried to give Auburn the win or whatever. And no, but no, they didn't.
They're that bad.
They're just bad. They're always bad. And I was worried from the start about how bad they would be. And
I will say this definitely felt like a Big 12 refs game, though.
Pac-12 refs.
College athletics.
Pac-12 refs are the ones that, like, notoriously are always like, every week, we got to issue an apology.
Yeah,
for refs. Suspended refs for weeks because they just screwed up so bad.
I would have rather had Big Ten refs for this.
No yeah, joke. Or you know what would be really great? There's like a national referee service that's certified by
Wow.
Okay.
That holds people accountable?
Here's the thing. What if there was like a national association of collegiate athletics? They made
in
the
NCAA.
Yeah, we'll work on it. And they make the rules, right? And that's really what they're there to do, is to make the rules. And then to enforce those rules, they certify the officials, and the crews are sent out by a national office. So there's a standardized crew.
Even like full-time.
You know, that doesn't it doesn't work out for basketball so much.
They don't do it there either, really.
Those are – you're right. They're just a – big pool of dudes that got some sort of training at some point, allegedly.
But yeah, it's pretty lousy that we end up with the same lousy refs.
The officials obviously did not cost Auburn the game. Like it just being so bad, whoever won or lost, you could point to those officials and say, "Wow, they were really bad."
I mean, they really...
I mean, I think the final score in this game did reflect how the two teams played. I mean, I think Penn State was the better team.
Yeah, and I mean, they definitely... complaints
about all these other things, but, you know, Penn State didn't cause Auburn to throw a fade on 4th-and-2.
Penn State didn't throw an incomplete pass in the second half.
Penn State didn't cause...
Not the first ones.
Penn State didn't cause Auburn to put zero pressure on a suspect quarterback all night. None. We hit him one time, I think.
And we got an interception. We got an interception on that play.
Yeah, and the saddest part about it is it's a it isn't like this is known as a great offensive line. It's actually known as like a pretty suspect offensive line that gives up a lot of sacks. And Auburn's got none.
That was my takeaway at the end of the night. Because, you know, we sort of knew what we had. I'm positive on the offensive line more. I came away a little more positive on them than I thought I would be. But it's the defense that around the third, sometime in the third quarter, even though we had a pretty good third quarter, I started to think this defense is not really doing what I would want it to do. And then when we could not stop them, in the fourth on that one drive, I just,
I still wonder how much of it's schematic and how much is talent. Because, I mean,
it's the same talent.
The talent was good. So, last
year. You're right. It's got to be schematic, which.
Right. And I think we could all kind of see. I mean, yes, it's a change of its coordinator, and it sounds like a pretty heavy change in strategy of, you know, instead of playing the press man, they're playing the softer zone. And it just, without getting a pass rush, that zone falls apart no matter how good your secondary is.
Right.
And secondary didn't play great. Don't get me wrong there. But with no pass rush, it doesn't matter who's back there.
Right.
And I'm not sure. I can't remember how much we actually blitzed or if we didn't blitz and, you know, relied on the front four to get home. But, yeah, something's got to change there. I'll give them credit. I mean, it sounds like the Brian Harsin at least is very aware of that. He made it pretty clear in the pressers. So I'll give him a chance.
My complaint was not about the players. It was, what are we doing? Like, why are we not putting pressure on him? It did not make any sense to me at all in the moment. And I'm still just as confused by what we're doing. I mean, notoriously, we had trouble getting the quarterbacks last year, right?
Yeah.
Last couple of years, yeah.
But it's still you have to do better than we did. And I really think that's what cost us this game. They were just better on offense than we were on defense, which I know that sounds like a stupid like thing to say. But, I mean, it's just true. Like, They were
only
better
in the passing game. We stuffed them on the ground. Yeah. They were under 3 yards of carry.
Their receivers were better than our receivers too, which is something I kept saying during the game. I really felt like that was the big difference. Like, our receivers just weren't good enough, and theirs were.
I mentioned this in the Slack that you cannot in 2021's college football, which is not the same thing as 2015's college football. You cannot go to the college football playoff and be successful if you do not have elite talent at quarterback and wide receiver, which also means
get there with not elite talent at quarterback if you have elite talent at wide receiver.
Who is the last not elite quarterback to win a national championship? He's a first round pick and is a starter for the New England Patriots.
Not an elite quarterback.
I would say if you're a QB1 in the NFL, I'll classify that as elite quarterbacking. So who was the last guy that is not a QB1? It's Jake Coker is the answer, by the way. It's 2015's Jake Coker. And he threw for 340 yards in that national championship game. So even Jake Coker was able to do it.
Well, Jake Coker did it because
with elite wide receiver talent.
Elite wide receivers. You can be, like, again, you can have a mediocre quarterback as long as you have elite wide receivers.
To the flip side, if you cannot get home and cover pass defense, you are going to get beat a lot of times in the modern college football. Like,
yeah. Because I don't think we got we did not get beat by an elite quarterback in this game. No. We got beat by a guy that's
about as good as Bo Nix.
Yeah. And they have better wide receivers.
If you,
and I think better play calling.
It used to be a long time ago, you got to run the ball and stop the run. That was what everybody used to say. If you can't run the ball and stop the run, you can't win games. Now it's like, really, to be honest, if you can't pass and you can't sack the quarterback and keep them from completing downfield passes, you're going to lose. And you're going to lose usually fast and by a lot of points.
Especially on defense, it's not. You don't even have to be an elite shutdown secondary or stopping the pass, but you have to be opportunistic. You have to get sacks. You have to have pass breakups. You know, you can't just be, oh, we'll keep it in front of us. And
right.
Because look at this game.
In front of you at 7, 8, 9 yards per completion doesn't do you any good.
Look at this game, to wit. Auburn could run the ball, and they could stop the run. And they got beat. And they got
We abandoned trying to run the ball.
They got beat because a Bo Nix clone could do whatever he wanted when he threw the ball. They ran the ball for 2 yards a carry. Clonix. Good job. They ran the ball for 2 yards a carry. And doesn't matter because they could throw the ball.
I don't think you're necessarily wrong. I don't know that this game is the best example of that, because we just instead of doing what we were good at, we were like, no, we got to pass. And so we kind of abandoned what worked. I think we could have won this game with Bo having that same stat line if we had just had a better called game.
If we had some sort of, like, we didn't utilize play action much for as good as we were running. You could have probably really worked on it with play action and then make Bo Nix able to make a little more comfortable reads with people biting on play action to tank.
Yeah.
Well, Bo has shown he's more comfortable. I mean, forget the reads. He's more comfortable with the deep ball this year.
Right.
Yeah, I think that may have been there if you set up play action a little more.
Yeah. Everything was short.
I add a touchdown pass to this, and it's like you can win a ball game doing that, and when it counted, we had some weird play calls. I mean, this definitely felt like a game where coaching just sort of failed us and on both sides of the ball. And at the worst possible times.
The worst part about it was Penn State ran a wildcat touchdown with a tight end.
Yeah.
They threw a pass out of an off-balance set with a wideout that was a lineman.
So
we got beat by Gus.
Yes, we got beat by Gus. They did to us. I was sitting there watching it. I'm like, they kept getting these huge, big chunk plays. We would stuff them, and then they get a big old chunk play. And they just did that. They did it. That they killed us with that, and that's how they scored all their touchdowns. Is all of a sudden they'd get 20 yards, and then another 30, and they'd be in the end zone.
My brother and I were laughing because it was like every first down Auburn would stop them for a yard, and then second down they'd get a first down, or second down they'd get stopped.
Why are we supposed to be? Especially early on in the game, why are we supposed to be scared of this dude that got canned from Texas? Like, they're like, yeah, they got the guy from Texas. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, why?
He called a better game than Bobo did.
Yeah.
Because I don't really know what the game plan was for Bobo. Was it like, what was he? Was he passing to establish the run? Was he running to establish passing lanes? Was he committed? There was nothing.
It didn't seem like
that. I couldn't tell you what was going on.
Yeah.
I will say that the one that, if it goes slightly differently on the field, it becomes a great call is the Kobe Hudson trick play.
Yeah. Oh, I agree.
I mean, and the thing is, the reads were right.
Kobe
got it. It wasn't open downfield. He didn't tuck it, but tried to run, and the cutback lane was there. There's nobody on the left side of the field if he just doesn't fumble.
Well, see, I just
It's an unfortunate. I mean, you could tell he was devastated. It's just,
well, he got hit though, and he wasn't gonna make he's getting hit when he fumbles. Like, there's a guy right there when he drops it though. Like, there's literally a guy right there.
I mean, he may have been touched, but he wasn't being tackled by any means.
He was not gonna. I don't think he's getting those yards. He's getting tackled. There's a guy right there next to him.
He's got it. I'm with Ryan on this.
I don't. The dude was literally right there. He's the one that recovered the ball. I don't think he's making that.
But he wasn't being touched. The guy didn't force a fumble. He just dropped the ball.
Yeah, but there's a guy right there in his face. Like, it's,
he was carrying the ball like a high school quarterback, which is
not good. Not good.
He was a high school quarterback, which was
exactly. I don't think my whole issue is that's the call you make when you're up 3 points,
yeah,
a touchdown coming out of the half. Don't do that in that situation with a team that's trying to like if again, maybe you do that if Auburn's 6-0 and you're trying to get a little something going coming out of the half in that situation. But with an unproven team, a bunch of guys who have stunk on offense for a couple of years now, and you're trying to, I don't know.
But that, apparently this is kind of a Harsin, that was kind of a Harsin hallmark at Boise State, was early on the first drive out of the half, if he had the ball.
Right.
He would do a trick play to try, or at least a huge deep play to try and, because if you hit that right there, even if you hit it and he gains 40 yards running the ball somehow, like, you just get a big play, all of a sudden Auburn is in, the crowd is out of the game.
Yeah.
Like, pff, gone.
I just, conceding that, okay, maybe it was it was going to work. I don't like it in that situation, and maybe I'm just being too conservative, but what I called it at the time was, I thought it was naive, and I still think it was pretty naive.
That's fair. Naive in the sense of, this is still a very unproven team.
Yeah.
Unproven in the big spots. I mean, if you have Ryan Davis run that play.
Yeah, right.
That's great. I mean, so,
but you got to have, like, that's the thing. I don't want to give Kobe Hudson the chance at some point, because.
Sure, yeah.
Like,
I just don't think you do it.
We don't have Ryan Davis.
When you do it there, I think the downside of it going bad is worse than the upside of it going good. That crowd was into it after they got that.
I'll also say that the sideline, and this is not a knock on Gus, but there was a lot of emotion on the Auburn sideline that I don't remember really seeing a lot of under Gus. Like, Jacoby McClain, when he got ejected, I mean, he was distraught.
Well, it was unjust.
And Kobe Hudson comes over to the sideline, and you can tell he is kind of distraught. Yeah. And these guys are really into it. And, like, the only way I can describe it is, like, they looked really ticked off.
Yeah,
that they were losing this game. And at the end of the game, they didn't look sad. They looked mad.
Yeah.
Was kind of the way to describe it. Like, they just looked really ticked off, that cheesed off, as we used to say. They really cheesed off that they had this one, and they let it get away. And that's not like a – I don't think we were the better team by any stretch.
No.
But we had the opportunity to steal a game.
I don't think there's a ton separating either team.
No.
And Auburn can improve. The defensive scheme is what worries me more than anything. Because I think we know what we have on offense, and it just comes down to play calling, whether we're going to screw that up or not.
In development, Kobe Hudson's not who he's going to be.
Right.
This is still an offense that's going to run some people out of Jordan Hare, though.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. Oh, I mean, Bo's been a different dude at home anyway, so, you know, if that continues, then, you know, we're going to win some ball games by a lot. I wouldn't be surprised if, like see him go out there and put up like an angry 70 points on George State this weekend.
I would like that. Well,
before we get to that, I do want to shout out one more guy who played really well, Chandler Rutan, who we've kind of talked about him as like one of the backup, you know, third or fourth linebackers coming into the year. But after Jacoby got ejected, and then I didn't even realize it at the time, but I guess Owen Papa was hurt around that same time. Wooten was the best player on the defense. He had 10 tackles, 1.5 tackles for loss. It was good to see him after, you know, first big game back after being out for a year to kind of step up the challenge.
Yeah, I was glad to see him come in and get some tackles when we needed them there after McLean was out of the game. I was really worried when McLean was gone. I didn't even realize Owen was out by that point. And I was just thinking, man, our best defender is gone now. So there's the game. And Wooten came in and played well. I mean, he played like a guy that had played a lot a couple of years ago. So it was good to see.
All right. Well, we got Georgia State. Ryan, tell me what the people need to know about Georgia State. First and foremost, what time is the game this weekend?
Do I get to do the honors about kickoff time this week?
Let's do it.
3 p.m.
It's a 3 p.m. game. What channel are we on? Is that a SEC network?
It should be an SEC network kick.
Yeah. So, guys, it's 3 p.m. Central.
I'll be in the midst of a 2-year-old birthday party, so that'll be
3 p.m. is the worst game time, by the way. Once you have kids, 3 p.m. is the worst game time. That's after nap time. That's it's horrible because you can't really. There's nothing like
it's the perfect Iron Bowl kick though, which is usually 2:30, not 3.
No. The LSU game at 8 is actually a better kick time for me.
Yeah.
Because I'll get the kids asleep. It's going to work
out great for me. Kids are asleep. I stay up until midnight anyway. So here we go.
See, Ryan, there's this other thing called other people that you don't have to worry about right now. And
yeah, great.
I know. You get to do whatever you want whenever you want. The game could be at 1 o'clock in the morning. You're like, yeah, why not? I'll watch the game at 1 o'clock in the morning. It could be at 11:30.
That would be called Hawaii football. Which,
right.
Yes.
11 o'clock is actually terrible as well. Really, only late kicks, please. Because 11 o'clock, I might still be coaching soccer at 11 o'clock.
Yeah, 11 a.m. kickoffs are bad. Like anything, I'm just a big fan of the, like, anything after 5.
Yeah.
2:30, it's just too hot.
Because I can also earn, like, points. If the game's at 8, I can watch the kids basically all day.
I also like to tailgate, so right. Like a 5 p.m. or later kick gives me plenty of time. Even if I like have, you know, I've got the kids in the morning, I can still get out there, tailgate for 4 or 5 hours, and make it to the game. So 3 p.m. I'm out. I can't do anything.
3 p.m. is the worst. All right. So where is Georgia State in the as bad as Akron scale?
So they're not Akron. They're not great. Generally, you know, if you look at FPI, SP Plus, you know, Sagarin, and they're around 100 overall. Not particularly good. They beat Charlotte last week, which Charlotte's also pretty bad. And then they got boat raced by UNC and drawing a blank on who else it was.
But is Georgia State on a neutral field, what are they favored by? Because I remember you mentioned that Akron would have been 20-point favorites over Alabama State.
Yeah, they would – let's see. By SP Plus, they would be on a neutral field 17-point favorite. No, 7-point favorites.
They're a touchdown Akron, better than
17,
Akron.
17.
Wow, Akron's 17 so bad, point favorite man.
Over Akron.
By SP Plus, yes.
Okay.
So what's Auburn's line by SP Plus over them?
Over Georgia State?
Yeah.
Let's double check. 29.
Like okay. Which is, I think, pretty close to the Vegas line.
Yeah, I think Vegas line's around 27.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to see this team kind of exercise some demons and blow Georgia State off the field, just like they've done Akron and Alabama State. Georgia State did make a quarterback change last week, so he's going into week three. He was 6 of 12 for 139 yards passing, which only explosive plays. No
finish.
But there's not really any kind of focus on offense. I mean, there's five different guys with 100 yards, either rushing or receiving. Nobody's got more than one touchdown. Ideally, we clamp down the rushing game and find some sort of pass rush for this one. But we'll see.
I hope we can get a pass rush, man. That's the one thing. This may be the game where we try some, throw some stuff against the wall in terms of how to get a pass rush.
I would like to see it be the game where we, you know, try out some of the wide receivers that are we have not been heard from this year.
Is Elijah Kenyon alive? Like, is he still on the team? I googled him.
So
I googled to see if he had transferred. I was like, man, maybe he transferred after that bowl game.
I wanted to transfer after that bowl game,
and he didn't.
Well, all right, so he doesn't have a ton of productivity in his career, I guess. I mean, I understand the poor play of our wide receivers so far, but he's being talked up as a guy who's, you know, awesome last year. How many catches do you think he had last season?
We had that one. He had the bowl game, and he went off.
Yeah,
so he had three career catches going into the season.
They were all in the same game. He didn't play.
Yeah, because
I just think it's funny that we're all clamoring for this guy. I mean, he's extremely talented. You know, 6'4", got size.
We're clamoring for something different than what we have now, and we know there's guys that have been able to catch a ball at least once before, that we haven't seen at all, friend of the show, Josh Black, I believe, has pointed out Harsin seems to be really leaning on older guys who've been around, and maybe it's time to change.
I think it was James Jones who said it was guys who maybe more easily grasped the offense.
Sure,
whoever got it quickest, you got to start, and so you end up with, you know, you're starting guys just because they tested good early on.
Well, and I do wonder how healthy Javarius Johnson actually was going into this game. As dynamic as he looked against Akron, he barely showed up in this game. He didn't have an issue with drops. He wasn't targeted very much. So I don't know if he was being blanketed by their number one guy or just what was going on there.
And it wasn't. And again, this is like, again, Bo Nix gets off the hook because this wasn't like he was missing guys who were just running free in the secondary. He's done that before. That wasn't this game. This game, nobody was open. He was not missing open receivers. There just weren't any open receivers to miss.
Yeah, that's true.
So he was just check down, check down, check down. Or the play calls were just screens and bubbles and...
Yeah, maybe they were just that good at in the secondary. I mean, maybe that's it. Maybe they're the best team we'll see.
Well, I don't think they're going to be the best team we'll see in the secondary. Because Georgia
in the month of September, they'll probably be the best team we'll see.
Yeah. The funny thing is, like, Arkansas is looking better and better every day. I'm not 100% sure how good they actually are. I think that we're going to find out this weekend.
I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it at all.
I don't think the Texas game was a fluke per se, but I think that was them playing at the top end of their ability.
And I think Texas might stink.
I think Texas might stink.
Are they not back?
No.
No. I don't see how they go from unranked to 16th off of beating who?
Because exactly. Texas gets the little number in front of its name every year. And that's the joke, is that they could have they literally fired their coach and then started the year ranked in the top 20.
Well, Arkansas gets A&M this week, so we'll learn a little bit more there.
Like, think about that. They fired the coach last year. They fired the coach, hired Sarkisian, who was not, blowing everybody's doors off at SC, and they started the year ranked. Only a Texas or Notre Dame would get that kind of thing, where they just, they've got to be a top 25 team. Yeah. Arkansas beats them and jumps from no votes receiving to 16th in the polls.
Just whatever. Whatever. I'm sure they're fine. I don't think they're going to be as garbage as they've been the last 3 years.
They're enormous. Everybody on the team is gigantic. Their quarterback is huge. Their running back is huge. Their line is huge.
That didn't help. That didn't help out old Brett Bielema very much, because that was his strategy as well.
It's true.
Get the biggest dudes that you could possibly find, and they still stank.
Auburn could use some of those big dudes, though.
Yeah, I think we could. We could use big, slow guys. I don't care if they're slow.
Yeah.
As long as they're big and they push somebody, I'm good with it.
One of my favorite players from the Penn State game was Tony Fair, because he did exactly what he was asked to do.
Yeah.
Penn State had a really hard time on third and shorts. Mm-hmm. And on fourth and shorts, like that fake punt that was called not a first down. But like, Tony Fair, just your job is to stand right there and don't let anybody push you backwards. Great. Mission accomplished. He's ball snapped. Tony Fair did not move, and no one could move him. He ate up the middle of the field.
Going back to Penn State, I just don't want to forget it. We got to talk about Jarquez Hunter. The hurdle in the fourth quarter.
Oh, yeah.
It was amazing.
That got me fired up.
I thought we were winning the game at that point right there.
Third quarter was a thing of beauty. I think we focused a little bit on the negative here. That third quarter was we looked like the better team, because we looked like, oh yeah, they're not going to stop us. Like, we could do this all day. But then the fourth quarter came, and
Yeah, like it's in the Gus lingo, this would be something we can build on. There's a lot of things we can build on in that third quarter. But there are, like, there's a lot of you found some. Every year you got to find some new guys. And Hunter seems to be one of those guys.
Well, Gus had that thing like the year that. Well, both years that we did really well under Gus, we had some really crappy games early in the season, and we learned from them and got really good, and that could always happen here. I mean, I really don't think we knew what we had until this game, and now I think the coaches know a lot more about what we have.
And that's normal. Most teams,
yeah.
Most teams outside of like a couple of teams, that's how they operate. Like, even I heard an interview with Bill Belichick where he talked about how he considers the first four games of the NFL season as an extension of the preseason.
Sure.
Like, he's like, yeah, I want to win them, but like, they really are just for me to figure out what we've got going after week five. Like, it's just, you just need a couple of games to figure out what you have.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm excited because this running back group still is going to get Sean Shivers back soon.
Yeah.
I mean, if he's – I hate it for him, but if he's your third running back at this point, that's – I don't know many running back rooms I would take over this one.
Especially as good as he can be catching the ball.
Yeah.
Right. Even he has three touches this year, and two of them are touchdowns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We kind of needed – that was one thing we didn't do a ton against Penn State, was we didn't throw the ball out of the backfield to running backs. And I think if we had Sean Shivers
– I don't think we ran a single wheel route. That's disappointing. Well, we ran
the goal line fade was technically a wheel round.
Oh, Jesus. Well, it's no longer undefeated.
Yeah, because it was supposed to be a Clemson versus Alabama style rub route where the inside guy was going to pick the corner who was supposed to defend the wheel route. The corner, it didn't happen at all. Like the guy wasn't even touched.
No. I'll also say, I may have missed it, but it's nice to not hear some platitudes about how our goals are still in front of us. Like Gus was real fond about talking about. Harsin isn't pretending that we're going to compete for a national championship this year. He's not saying we're not, but he's not out there acting like, you know, he's not doing for the cameras what he's probably doing in the locker room. What every coach should do in the locker room is, you know, these are our goals. We can still reach these. He's not playing to the cameras. I like the change. I was never that annoyed by anything Coach Malzahn did in press conferences like a lot of people are, but I'm embracing the change. I do like something new, shaking it up a little bit.
I'm sure you'll love what Pat Narduzzi at Pitt said post game this week. If you heard that, after losing to Western Michigan 44-41,
ouch.
His post game comment was, "It's not an SEC or it's not an ACC game. We can still win the conference. Your goals are still in front of us."
I like funny people. So.
All right. So I guess unless we have anything else, I do want to hit one thing before we wrap up.
We want to take a break first?
We're a little past that, I think.
Yeah, we're past that. Jack's going to just put one in at the end.
Sure.
All right. Tank Bigsby. So we're through three games. Tank Bigsby, 47 carries, 343 yards. Jarquez Hunter, 26 carries, 320 yards. That puts them on pace 1,372 and 1,280 yards, respectively. Does Crow know the last time Auburn had 2,000-yard running backs?
Do they have to be running backs?
Yes, specifically running backs. So no Cam, no Nick Marshall, 2,000-yard running backs.
Is it Bo Jackson and Brent Fullwood?
It's not. I was going to ask you a year, but it's not, so it doesn't matter.
Is it? Am I close in the 80s?
Chief, do I give him any hints, or how are we doing this?
Would you say yes or no? Is it a 1980s running back duo?
Give him a hint.
Okay, no, it's not.
Okay. I mean, was it Carnell and Ronnie? I don't remember.
It was not. I believe Ronnie Brown had like around 900 yards.
Right. And I know it wasn't Ben Tate and Brad Lester, because Brad never had 100 in a game. He had like 99 in a game. He had like 96 like four times. It's the most tragic.
He was a touchdown machine, Brad Lester.
And like king of the 90-yard games.
Well, and I think he had something like 9 yards a carry he averaged one season, but never a 100-yard game.
Right, never 100 yards. I don't know. You stumped me. You've stumped me.
All right, Chief, you got any guesses here? I'm hearing Josh Black and James Jones and Drew Mack just screaming right now. Get some answers.
Is it
Lionel James?
Yeah, is it Little Train and
not Little Train? There's two names you'll know. I mean, it's not some obscure 1940s. Never heard of them. If you had 1,000 yards rushing in the 40s, by the way.
Oh man, I got it. Yeah, it's 2005. It's Kenny Irons and Trey Smith.
Kenny Irons? Yeah, I was gonna say Kenny Irons. It's not Kenny. It's not Trey Smith for sure. And it's not. It's not Cap and Trey, right?
It's not.
Lawyer Tillman.
All right, let's.
Where are we?
I'll give you half the answer. Do you want the names of the of what you want? One name of a running back, or do you want the year?
Give me the name of a player.
Okay, so one of the duo. I'll give you the one with fewer yards is Joe Cribbs.
He of the car wash.
Yes, he of the car wash.
The other running back ran for 1,200 yards, 7.5 yards a carry, 10 touchdowns.
This is like 90.
It was what now?
It's not 90. We had no 1,000-yard rushers in the 90s.
It was 1979.
Wait, Steven Davis didn't get 1,000 yards?
I don't think so.
Steven Davis, and I believe Plastic did as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah, okay. All right. But not in the same season.
Correct. All right. I don't think you're going to get there. Joe Cribbs, James Brooks. Each had 1,000 yards in 1979.
James Brooks. And then he went on to be a famous actor. I was really, like, good for him. And director. James L. Brooks is a director.
Is who I'm thinking. Not know either.
So he was a running back, and then he directed the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
I think he might have directed the Mary Tyler Moore Show before he was a running back.
A man with many talents.
Anyway, so those two guys, I mean, it's still early. It would be still pretty surprising if they both ran for 1,000 yards, and we've had some not great competition. But this is what you got to do early. Do it again this week against Georgia State. Get the 400 yards piece.
And, yeah, I want to talk more about James Brooks movies. So he also directed As Good As It Gets, which many people thought of as the best romantic comedy of all time, starring Jack Nicholson.
And Diane Lane, right?
I think that's right. It's really good. He directed Broadcast News, Terms of Endearment, Spanglish.
But Spanglish is not bad.
Spanglish is not bad at all.
It's Adam Sandler movie, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Then he decided, he directed this movie called How Do You Know? And I'm going to spend the next minute talking about How Do You Know. How Do You Know is a rom-com starring Reese Witherspoon. Mm. I'm going to give you the cast, and you're going to think, I bet this was probably okay. It's got Paul Rudd, Owen Wilson, Jack Nicholson, Reese Witherspoon. It is the worst movie that I have ever paid money to see. And it was so bad that I remember thinking, I should get up and walk out. But this is too bad for that. I need to see this to the end. I need to see, does it get worse?
And this is a cast that you could tell me it came out in like 1999 or 2018, and I don't know which
one. It came out in 2010.
2018, first of all, Jack Nicholson hasn't done any movies since The Departed, I don't think.
I thought he might have had like an Old Man Jack cameo. But.
And I think Reese Witherspoon is doing like made-for-TV stuff more now than...
she's really great.
She's with Apple TV, right?
Yeah, she's really great in that show, Morning Show.
Oh, okay. Okay.
James Brooks, this movie, Owen Wilson is in 2010. He's a pitcher for the Washington Nationals.
Hmm. Yeah, it's a long career.
So you are
done a lot of stuff.
Supposed to believe that this person is a professional baseball player, professional athlete. He has his shirt off at one point in the movie, and again, we're supposed to believe that he's a professional athlete.
Who?
And Owen Wilson.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He's just thin. Like, it's not like he's like, oh, this guy's a pro athlete. And I want to say
– the sacred timeline.
I and here's the thing. Luke Wilson was a pro athlete before
– no.
Oh.
They just played like lacrosse at St. Mark's here in Dallas.
Sure.
Reese Witherspoon, whose name in the movie is Lisa Jorgensen, is a former professional softball player.
Nope.
So
Owen Wilson already in his 40s in 2015.
He's supposed to be this young hotshot pro baseball player, and he's like in his mid-40s. So
Lisa that's like the OC when the dude that plays Ryan was like 26 playing a like 16-year-old.
So Lisa Jorgensen's entire life has been defined by softball, That's how it starts, the description of this film.
Her to be fair, Reese Witherspoon was 30, probably.
Yeah, but at 31.
But not supposed to be an active softball player.
Here's how men and women are treated in Hollywood. At 31, she's deemed too old to play softball and is cut from the team. After being cast adrift, she begins a fling with Maddie, a charming womanizer who plays professional baseball, who is older than her in real life.
To be fair, you could be 40-something and play baseball. But around I'm sure same, he's supposed to be 30 as well.
Around the same time, she goes on a blind date with George, Paul Rudd, a businessman on the hook for stock fraud.
Also 40 at the time, probably.
He's probably 100 at this point. He looks 26. Yeah.
He looks exactly like he did when he was in Clueless in 1996.
Caught in a romantic triangle with the two men, Lisa ponders the meaning of love. Although it's not a real triangle, because a real triangle would mean that Paul Rudd and Owen Wilson are also involved, and they're not.
That makes it a great movie.
That movie would be wild, but no. In this film, it was just terrible.
Part of the MCU, too.
Just terrible. It's 31% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. If you have a wife or a girlfriend who is extremely into rom-coms, give them this one. Tell them Crow sent you.
Every Southern girl loves a Reese Witherspoon movie.
Tell them, hey, let's watch How Do You Know? And you'll sit there going, babe, I'm telling you, all romantic comedies are terrible. Which is not really true. But you could use this movie as an argument for that because it is rancid.
Do you think Ryan remembers when Matt McConaughey was in nothing but rom-coms for about 10 years?
And some of them.
That's what I grew up knowing him as.
Okay, okay.
Some of them are
rom-com
good.
Guy. The Great Southern Exit.
How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days? Great film.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Failure to Launch? Really good.
Never seen it.
It's the Sarah Jessica Parker joint. The rest of them, Wedding Planner? Meh.
Nah. Yeah, I'm not a... It's
anyway,
it's not even really that funny, The Wedding Planner. It's
All right.
I want to address the elephant in the room before this is over. We start off the show with the Auburn family's newest hot beat. So no longer is we've got Jared the top song on the Auburn charts, but they can never take that away from you, Crow. They can never take it away from you. It's it happened. You did it. They can never take it away from you.
Well, I
that
don't
is unless you kill your wife and a waiter. That's the news, folks. Thanks.
That's the news, folks. Thanks. All right, everybody, have a wiggle weekend.